Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 1:32 p.m. We are in Belt Room 105 at the Thomas Stewart Building in the nation's most beautiful foggy capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Friday, February 6th. Members present are Senator Merrick, Senator Dunbar, Senator Ray Jackson, Senator Yunt, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome, everyone, to the Senate Labor and Commerce. Please turn off or silence your cell phones and join me in extending a warm Senate Labor and Commerce welcome to our recording secretary, Carrie Tupo, and our LAO moderator, Chloe Miller. We have three items on our agenda today. First, Senate Bill 211, extending occupational licensing boards. There are six of them that we are looking to extend with that piece of legislation, followed by Senate Bill 225, trusts, trust proceedings, and trustees. Rounding out our lineup is Senate Bill 198, PERS, TERS, Retirement, and Medical Eligibility. First up, Senate Bill 211. It's our third hearing on the bill. Previous hearings, we have had the initial presentation of the bill. We adopted a committee substitute, heard from our friendly legislative auditor, as well as the chairs of some boards. Today, it is my intention to take invited testimony from the remaining board chairs and complete public testimony, and then have committee discussion, take up a possible amendment, and look to the will of the committee. Here with us today to provide a brief recap of the bill, my staffer, Sir Matt Churchill, Esquire. Mr. Churchill, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your brief recap of the bill.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman. Matt Churchill, and I'm staff for Senator Bjorkman. Thank you, members of the Labor and Commerce Committee, for hearing Senate Bill 211 again today. This bill, again, extends the sunset dates of six professional boards that are set to expire on June 30th of this year. This bill follows the extensions recommended for each of them in the state's 2025 audits, as you heard from our auditor. Chris Curtis is again with us today to answer any questions, and Director Rob, I believe, is online for any questions that the committee may have. And also today, there will be invited testimony from the chairs of the boards. We have Crystal Herring for the Professional Counselors and Noah Shields for the Marital and Family Counseling Board, and Cheryl Markwood of the Certified Real Estate Appraisers. Thank you again for hearing Senate Bill 211 today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Churchill. We now have some invited testimony from the chairs of the Board of Professional Counselors, Board of Marital and Family Therapy, and the Real Estate Commission. First up is Crystal Herring. Ms. Herring, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please state your name, affiliation for the record, and begin your presentation.
Thank you so much. For the record, my name is Crystal Herring, and I serve as chair for the Alaska Board of Professional Counselors. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today in support of SB 211, which would extend the board following its sunset review. The Board of Professional Counselors exists to protect the health, safety, and welfare of Alaskans by ensuring that individuals providing professional counseling services are qualified, competent, and held to consistent ethical standards. Professional counselors provide critical mental health services across Alaska, including in rural and underserved communities. These services support individuals, families, veterans, first responders, and youth, and are often a frontline response to trauma, substance use disorders, and behavioral health crises. The board's statutory responsibilities include licensing professional counselors, establishing education and supervision requirements, adopting and enforcing a professional code of ethics, and ensuring ongoing competency through continuing education. These functions are essential to public protection. They ensure that counseling services in Alaska are delivered by trained, ethical, and accountable professionals, including in complex and high-risk situations. The board also adopts and updates regulations to reflect statutory changes, best practice, and evolving service delivery models, such as telehealth, which has greatly expanded access to care across our state. Without a dedicated regulatory board, specialized oversight of professional counseling would be diminished, reducing accountability and public protection at a time when demand for mental health services continues to grow. While you may have noted that the audit recommends a 6-year extension rather than the full 8 years due to administrative factors outside the board's control, we respectfully request your support of SB 211 to include a full extension of the Board of Professional Counselors so that we may continue providing stable and effective oversight in the public interest. Thank you for your time, and I am happy to answer any questions if I can.
Ms. Herring, thank you very much for your presentation today. Are there any questions or comments from committee members for Ms. Herring? Thank you again for joining us, ma'am. We'll go now to Noah Shields. Mr. Shields, would you state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony, please?
Yes, my name is Noah Shields, N-O-A-H, Shields, S-H-I-E-L-D-S, and I am the chair of the Alaska Board of Marital Family Therapy.
Very well, thank you. Could you begin your testimony, please?
Yes, through the chair, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. The Board of Marital and Family Therapy exists to protect the public by ensuring that individuals providing marital and family therapy services in Alaska meet consistent, rigorous standards for education, training, ethical practice, and professional accountability. Our work supports both public safety and access to quality mental health care through consistent licensure standards, clear expectations for practice, and accountability for licensees. Marital and family therapists often work with children, families in crisis, individuals experiencing trauma, and couples navigating significant life challenges. Because of this, the board's role in oversight, licensure, and enforcement has a direct impact on the safety and well-being of Alaskans. In recent years, the board has engaged in ongoing regulations projects within its authority to ensure that Alaska's requirements for licensure, supervision, professional conduct, and continuing education remain current with national professional standards and the evolving needs of Alaskans. This includes regularly reviewing and updating regulations to clarify expectations for licensees, support safe clinical practice, modernize language that was outdated, and ensure that new professionals entering the field are prepared to provide competent care. The board also plays a key role in reviewing applications, monitoring compliance with licensing requirements, and addressing complaints. Through timely case review, appropriate discipline action when necessary, the board helps maintain public trust and ensures that the standards for safe and ethical practice are upheld. Through this consistent regulatory work and oversight, the board helps ensure that Alaskans receive care from qualified, well-trained, and accountable professionals. For this reason, we respectfully urge your support for SB 211 to extend the Board of Marital and Family Therapy. Continuation of the board ensures that this essential work in public protection, professional accountability, and maintaining up-to-date professional standards can continue without interruption. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shields. Are there any questions or comments from committee members for Mr. Shields and the Board of Marital and Family Services? Hearing and seeing none, we will go next to Cheryl Markwood. Ms. Markwood, would you please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation?
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Cheryl Markwood. I am the chair of the Alaska Real Estate Commission. Through the chair, I'd like to take this opportunity to speak in support of SB 211 and the extension of the Real Estate Commission. The Real Estate Commission plays a critical role in protecting the public, maintaining professional standards, and ensuring confidence in one of the largest financial transactions most Alaskans will ever make, the purchase of sale of real estate property. Real estate impacts housing availability, economic stability, lending, development, property rights, and property management. Effective oversight matters. The Commission's responsibilities are clear and long-standing. We provide licensing qualified professionals, enforcing statutes and regulations, investigations, complaints, and taking disciplinary action when warranted, and providing guidance and education to promote compliance. These duties cannot be effectively absorbed elsewhere without loss of expertise or increased costs, and they are best carried out by a board dedicated solely to this industry. Regarding the Commission's most recent sunset audit, we take these findings seriously. The audit process is an important accountability tool, and the Commission has worked collaboratively with staff and the division to address recommendations, strengthen internal processes, and improve consistency, particularly in the documentation and procedural clarifications. Importantly, the audit did not identify any systematic failures or public risk that would justify discontinuing this commission. Instead, it confirms that the commission is functioning as intended and fulfilling its statutory role. The Alaska real estate market also presents unique challenges, including remote transactions, rural land issues, seasonal market pressures, and housing supply constraints. The commission provides Alaska-specific oversight informed by knowledge and local expertise. Extending the Alaska Real Estate Commission under SB 211 ensures continued consumer protection regarding stability and institutional knowledge while preserving legislative oversight through the sunset process. I thank you for your time and your consideration, and we hope that you'll continue ensuring that the Alaska Real Estate Commission is extended. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Markwood. Are there any questions or comments from committee members? Hearing and seeing none, that wraps up our slate of invited testifiers for today. At this time, I'll open public testimony on Senate Bill 211. Is there anyone in the room or online who would wish to provide some public testimony to this item? Hearing and seeing none, at this time I will close public testimony on Senate Bill 211. Is there any committee discussion? Senator Dunbar.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move an amendment at this time.
All right. Very well.
I move amendment N.2.
Should have object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Everyone should have a copy on their desk. We've been working with the auditor, Ms. Curtis. If Ms. Curtis might be able to come forward, we could speak a little to this while she's getting settled. I'll just say there were two boards that we identified as having deficits that had, I think, at least one case recommended a increase in their fees that went through a new process that went to the chief of staff of the governor, and they denied those fee increases. I don't think that is best practices, and so I initially intended to shorten the period with which we extend those boards to send a message. However, in speaking with Ms. Curtis and from the discussions we had last time, we felt that wasn't the appropriate recommendation, particularly given that the boards appear to have done the right thing, and perhaps they shouldn't be punished for something outside their control. So we worked with Ms. Curtis on this language, which would add a reporting requirement basically halfway through the extended board period. I also have a conceptual amendment because there's a small textual error. But before that, Mr. Chair, if Ms. Curtis could maybe speak a little bit to this.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Ms. Curtis, welcome back to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please state your name for the record and provide us with some color around this amendment, please.
Absolutely. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, and I'm your state legislative auditor. So this amendment is aimed at ensuring legislative oversight of corrective action for the recommendations that you find in the sunset audit reports. It requires us to go in, technically it will be the year before the first day of the, 36th legislature. So that will be, we do the audits the year before. So during 2028, we will do limited work specifically aimed at whether the boards and the department have addressed the findings that are in the audit report. So this work will not be a full audit. It will be a limited review. It'll be much more efficient and focused. And then we will present to the LBNA committee a report, or probably more like a memo, summarizing the current status of those recommendations and making additional recommendations if necessary. And that is to ensure that we continue to keep an eye on those recommendations in a more timely manner. So again, that will, the way that it's worded right now, will have us go be going in 2028. Limited review. These are not audits in accordance with standards. These are just focused corrective action type procedures on those audits recommendations that you see listed. And I believe the first day that before the 36th legislative session would be 20. So two more years from.
Yeah. I think it would be 2029.
Yeah, so next year is 27. Yes, it would be 2029, January, whatever, 15th to 20th, 2029. So we would be doing the work in 2028.
Are there any questions for Ms. Curtis?
Okay. Mr. Chair, I also need to make a conceptual amendment to the amendment.
One moment.
Okay.
I have one question. Are you comfortable doing that?
Yes, through the chair. I absolutely. I think it's a very cost-effective way at ensuring corrective action.
Most excellent. Okay. I will remove my objection. Is there any further objection to Amendment N.2?
Mr. Chair?
One moment. We'll adopt the amendment, and then I'll have you make a conceptual amendment to it.
I think we have – let me think here. I'm trying to think of, on the assembly, we'd have to amend it first before we adopted it. We have to amendment to the amendment.
We can do it either way.
Okay. I trust the chair.
Hearing no objection, Amendment N.2 is adopted. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I make a conceptual amendment to the amendment, adding the word April 17 and to line 14. And this is because the audits took place or were concluded on two different dates, April 17th and June 5th, not both on June 5th.
I'll object in case there's further explanation or discussion needed to conceptual amendment number one.
Ms. Curtis?
Just to clarify, those words go right in front of the word June 5th.
That's right.
Inserted, okay.
I'll remove my objection. Is there any further objection to conceptual amendment number one? Hearing and seeing none, conceptual amendment number one is adopted. Is there any further committee discussion? What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move to report committee substitute for Senate Bill 211, version 34-LS1252/November, from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. I also authorize legislative legal to make any conforming and or necessary changes.
Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, committee substitute for Senate Bill 211, version 34-LS1252/N, as in Nikiski, is reported as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. We will allow for Ledge Legal to make any necessary and conforming changes. We'll take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill. We're back on the record. It's 154 here at Senate Labor and Commerce. Next up is Senate Bill 225. We have here to present this bill Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Community and Economic Development, Anna Latham. Ms. Latham, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation of the bill.
Good afternoon, Senator Bjorkman and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, my name is Anna Latham. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Thank you very much for hearing Senate Bill 225 today. This is an act relating to trust proceedings, relating to non-judicial settlement agreements and trust matters, relating to the power of trustees, and providing for an effective date. The Department of Commerce is committed to making Alaska a great place to do business and grow our economy. Through our Alaska Business Initiative, we're promoting Alaska as the best place to invest, live, and work. We're constantly reviewing our processes, our statutes, and our regulations to make it easier to start and operate a business in Alaska. With that goal in mind, Commissioner Sandy and I asked our banking and securities team to review our trust statutes last summer and make recommendations for improvement. While Alaska's already a strong competitor for trust charters, we currently only have 4 trust companies, meaning there's room for growth. Working together with the Department of Law, the Banking and Securities team developed several recommendations to strengthen Alaska's legal framework for chartering trusts. SB 225 strengthens Alaska trust law by improving privacy protections, expanding non-judicial settlement authority, or the ability for parties to settle without going to court, clarifying fiduciary powers, broadening our decanting statutes, or the ability to move assets to a new trust without court approval, and it provides for stronger asset protection by shortening creditor look-back periods and strengthening anti-fraud measures. SB 225 improves Alaska's trust law by increasing flexibility, efficiency, privacy, and certainty for settlers, beneficiaries, and fiduciaries. And it reduces the administrative and litigation costs while preserving accountability. And tying this back to our economy, bringing out-of-state wealth into Alaskan management increases the demand in Alaska's financial sector and eventual growth. So thank you again for scheduling this hearing today, and I'll turn it over to my capable banking and securities director, Tracy Reno, to walk you through a sectional.
Thank you very much, Ms. Latham. Ms. Reno, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. Through the chair, for the record, my name is Tracy Reno, and I've been with the Division of Banking and Securities for 14 years, serving as the director since July of last year. I'm going to go ahead and read the sectional analysis for you today. And so we all have a level of understanding. A trust is a legal arrangement in which a trust grantor enlists a trustee to hold and manage assets such as money, property, investment securities on behalf of a trust beneficiary or beneficiaries. Trusts are an estate planning tool that allows individuals to protect and control their assets both during their lifetime as well as after death, and have existed in some form since the 12th century. Some of the language you will hear today in this bill is very technical and includes amendments drafted for Alaska's unique trust laws related to a legal instrument or trust. In honor of your time, I'm going to read a short version of the sectional. If there's a section you'd like me to dive deeper on, please let me know. Section 1, page 1.
One moment.
Yes.
Thank you for that. We always appreciate abbreviated section checks and rolls like this. It's pretty detailed. I'm wondering if you could present for the committee some real-world examples of, like, where this would apply. Like, what are we talking about here? Maybe if we could have kind of that understanding and connection to something we might be able to identify with, we could plug in parts of this sectional better into our legislative schema here.
So the Division of Banking and Securities regulates the trust companies chartered in Alaska. We do not dig into the deep legal instrument language. That is more for the Department of Law, which we will have somebody on the call for questions. But for example, if you wanted to set up a trust for your family, you could set that up, and the language that is in this bill will modernize the Alaska law. It is old, and there's room for modernization. It's important to Alaskans to have privacy and confidentiality, and so this bill will also allow them to have that in place similar to some other states. So we want to be competitive with other states so that people want to come here and open up a trust and have trust companies that manage them. So an example would be a family trust where you're setting up generational a protection for generational wealth that will exceed past when you die for maybe your grandchildren, great-grandchildren.
Okay. Great. Please continue.
Thank you. Page 1, Section 1, amends AS 1336-035, Court Jurisdiction Choice of Law, to add a new subsection J that requires the court to protect the privacy of a settlor and the beneficiaries of a non-charitable trust in trust proceedings by sealing all court records upon the filing of a petition and limiting access to listed persons. Section 2, page 2, amends AS 1336 Trust Administration to add a new section, AS 1336-057, Non-Judicial Settlement Agreements, allowing indispensable parties to enter into binding non-judicial settlement agreements on trust administration matters so long as the agreement does not violate a material purpose of the trust. If requested by an indispensable party, these agreements could be reviewed and approved by a court. The section specifies matters that can be settled non-judicially, such as a trust asset use, trustee actions, and trust termination. Section 3, page 3, amends AS 1336-079, Certification of Trust Penalty, subsection J, to clarify that the right to obtain a copy of the trust instrument in a judicial proceeding concerning the trust is subject to AS 1336-035J. Section 4 on page 3 amends AS 1336 to add a new section, AS 1336-115, which outlines a procedure for fiduciaries to notify beneficiaries of proposed trust administration actions. The notice must include details about the action and a period for beneficiaries to object. Fiduciaries are protected from liability if they comply with the notice requirements, no objections are raised, and the action does not breach a fiduciary duty. A fiduciary includes trustees, trust protectors, and trust advisors acting within their authority. AS 1336-157, exercise of power of appointment, is amended by sections 5 through 12. Sections 5 to 7 on pages 5 and 6 amend AS 1336-157 to clarify the powers of authorized trustees in appointing trust principal to new trusts and to adjust statutory language to align with the amended definition of authorized trustee and the new definition of ascertainable standard. These changes allow beneficiary trustees to be authorized trustees. While the law currently allows a permissible appointee to be someone other than a beneficiary of the invaded trust, the amendments make this more clear and state that a permissible appointee can include non-beneficiary persons, holders of a power of appointment, or the estates or creditors of the holder of a power of appointment. If beneficiaries are described as a class, new trusts may benefit current or future members without prematurely adding beneficiaries. Notably, these changes apply only to trustees with discretionary power that is not limited by an ascertainable standard. Section 8 on page 6 of the bill amends AS 1336-357 to make conforming languages and to expressly include that a beneficiary trustee may be an authorized trustee that can appoint principal of an invaded trust to new trust. It does not amend existing language for providing that a trustee with discretionary power that is limited by an ascertainable standard may move principal to new trusts, given the beneficiaries remain unchanged. Sections 9 to 12 on pages 6 and 7 further refine AS 1336-157 by adding ascertainable before standard and clarifying that distribution standards can be modified for special needs, pooled, or third-party trusts. They make citation corrections, clarify that new trusts limited by Section D or E grant the same power of appointment as the original trust, and accommodate the repeal of subsection F. New subsection I allows trustees exercising power not limited by an ascertainable standard to set different income standard distribution standards, assign principal to special needs, pooled, or third-party trusts, and adjust mandatory distribution rates within a specified restrictions. Section 13 on page 7 repeals and reenacts AS 1336-158, additional provisions relating to exercise of a power of appointment, subsection C, to state if more than one authorized trustee has discretionary power to distribute all or part of the trust principal, an authorized trustee with discretionary power that is not limited by an ascertainable standard may exercise the power under AS 1336-157A through C and I. Section 14, page 7, amends AS 1336-158E, additional provisions relating to exercise of a power of appointment by removing the requirement to ascertain a settler's intent while retaining fiduciary requirements of acting in the best interest and a prudent person. Section 15, page 8, simplifies limitations on an authorized trustee's power to appoint under AS 1336-157, and ensuring a trustee cannot reduce a beneficiary's current right to mandatory distributions for which a marital deduction has been taken under federal or state law. The amendment also repeals specific prohibitions and redundant language related to appointments to special needs, pooled or third-party trusts. Section 16, page 9, amends AS 1336-159, implementation of a power of appointment, subsection C, by clarifying that when an authorized trustee seeks court approval to exercise a power of appointment, the trustee has the option to send the required notice to all qualified beneficiaries or to a person who can represent and bind a qualified beneficiary under AS 1306-120. Section 17, page 9, amends AS 1336-159, implementation of power of appointment, subsection D, by adding the word executed before the reference to the appointed trust and the instrument exercising the power. Sections 18 through 20 on pages 9 and 10 amend or add definitions as in AS 1336-215. Appointed trust is clarified by adding to the description of what new trusts may receive principal from an invaded trust. Authorized trustee is amended and simplified to align with the definition of authorized fiduciary in the Uniform Trust Decanting Act and to allow a beneficiary trustee to be an authorized trustee. And Section 20 adds definitions for ascertainable standard and beneficiary. Section 21 on page 10 amends AS 1336-370 Trust Protector, subsection B, to provide that a trust protector's powers are conferred by the trust instrument, may include the power to issue a notice of proposed action under AS 1336-115. Section 22 on page 11 amends AS 3440-110, restricting transfers of trust interests, subsection D, by reducing the time limit for creditors to bring claims against a settler for fraudulent asset transfers to a trust. For existing creditors, the time is reduced from 4 years to 1 year after the transfer, from 1 year to 6 months after discovering the transfer. For new creditors, the time is reduced from 4 years to 1 year after the transfer. Section 23, page 11, amends AS 3440-110, restricting transfers of trust interests, subsection I, to clarify that the settler's solvency affidavit is required at the time of initial funding of the trust. It additionally clarifies that after initial funding, the settler may periodically renew the affidavit to include additional transfers of assets to the trust. However, the settler is presumed to be solvent with respect to these transfers. Section 24 on page 12 repeals AS 1336-157F, 159I, and 215B10. Section 25 on page 12 states that uncodified law of the state of Alaska is amended by adding a new section to clarify that AS 1336-157, 158, 159, and 215, as amended by this act, apply to a trust that is created on or after the effective date of this act. And finally, Section 26 on page 12 provides an immediate effective date for this act.
Well done, Ms. Reno. Thank you. I appreciate that. Are there any questions or comments from committee members? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a number of questions, but do we have some additional testimony before that or today? Or
I believe we have other people online who are available, yes.
But not invited testimony?
No, we also have some folks that will provide some testimony.
I'll hold my questions till after the testimony then.
Very well. Ms. Latham.
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, we do have Amy Robinson with Department of Law who has expertise in this area of law and will be available for questions as well.
Okay.
Any other questions? We'll go now to Ryan Dukowitz with the Division of Banking and Securities. Mr. Dukowitz, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you. My name is Ryan Dukowitz. I'm a financial examiner for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, Division of Banking and Securities, and I'm available to assist with questions.
Okay. So it looks like Mr. Dukowitz and Ms. Robinson are available for questions. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a few questions here. Some just for me, but I think also for the public. And I don't know if this is a question for you or for Department of Law. You use the term ascertainable. What does ascertainable mean in this context?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I would defer to Amy Robinson at Department of Law for the best possible answer for that question.
Ms. Robinson,
good afternoon, for the record.
Please continue. Thank you.
Thank you. No problem. Good afternoon, for the record. This is Amy Robinson with the Department of Law.
Should I repeat my question?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in Section 9 and elsewhere, we're adding the word ascertainable. What does ascertainable mean in this context?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar. The word ascertainable is inserted before standard to align with the definition that's added at Section 20 of the bill. This is a phrase that's frequently used in trust documents of this type. And it refers to a provision in the trust or governing instrument that directs how a trustee can distribute principal or income of the trust.
Okay, well, I appreciate, I didn't see the definition. I appreciate that. But can, for sort of the lay person, what is the difference between what exactly are we doing in Section 9 by adding ascertainable? So include the same standard authorizing trustee to distribute the income or the same ascertainable standard authorizing trustee to distribute the income. What is the practical difference between those two terms?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, Amy Robinson for the record from the Department of Law. So just your question, in Section 9, the word ascertainable standard is added primarily to make a conforming amendment to align with the new definition. But to speak to your question about what does that really accomplish, what I would say is that the structure of 13.36157 creates two different abilities for trustees to exercise the decanting power. There's trustees that are not limited, and what they can do is referenced in subsection A. They can take actions that are more expansive and that aren't limited by an ascertainable standard. However, other trust documents and other trustees may be limited, and when they are, the actions that they take with respect to decanting a trust have to align with the existing standard. They have to stay within it. So because we are inserting this definition of ascertainable standard, and because we're not trying to change what powers of what the law currently refers to as having unlimited discretion, I believe, or limited discretion, the language is shifted. Does that address your question?
I think it did, but it doesn't mean I fully understood it. So I'll have to ask some follow-ups afterwards. I think this is quite a complicated bill, really highly technical, and I'm going to have a lot of conversations with the Department of Law and also with the division offline. But a couple other policy questions, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Indeed.
So, well, first of all, is there anyone from the court system here?
Yes, our friendly neighborhood court liaison, Nancy Mead, is here.
Oh, wonderful. May I speak with Ms. Mead? She's
yes.
In the back there. Our friendly neighborhood elite athlete and court liaison.
Former.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize the court system doesn't really take policy positions exactly, but really speak to the impact that they have. But there are Section 2, for example, I think there are several places, but Section 2 in particular, we're expanding the ability of folks to have agreements without involving the courts. Does the court system have any thoughts on what those impacts might be on the public?
Through the chair, for the record, Nancy Mead, general counsel for the Alaska court system. Non-judicial settlement agreements are really permitted in many, many areas because people should agree when they have disputes without court involvement. I think that it makes sense, though I'm not an expert in trusts, to allow people to work out their problems without coming to the court. This does allow one of the parties who might enter a non-judicial settlement agreement completely on their own to come in and ask the court to approve it. I don't know how often that would happen, but it seems like a sensible provision in my experience.
Follow, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So in other kinds of settlements, it's sometimes the case that judges find that, yes, you've reached a settlement, but I find that this is unfair or violates the law in some way. Perhaps there was a large imbalance of power between the parties, for example, and it was, I'm forgetting the term now, but a contract of adhesion or whatever I want to call it. Are there any concerns that that might happen in this context, that you might have an imbalance in power and now the court won't get to see and rule on it?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, as I read this section, this allows people to come to agreements about things before a case is even filed in court. And then after they have an agreement, they may come back on page 3, lines 3 through 5, and ask for approval. And the court would have to determine whether it's something they could have approved. But this doesn't presuppose a court action that they're settling on their own, which the court always has to approve. Okay. This, in my reading, is just agreeing on things completely outside of the court context. And again, that makes perfect sense to me to allow people to do that.
Very good. Okay, thank you. That's all the questions I had for the court. Thank you, Ms. Mead.
Before you go, since you're here, thank you for joining us. Do you have any concerns with this piece of legislation?
To the chair, I have discussed a few small, very small changes with the Department of Law. We're working on those. We're talking about whether some of the thoughts I had might be acceptable and not impact their policy calls in this bill. They're very minor, and they're something that I think will be worked out.
Most excellent. Thank you. Any additional questions or comments? Senator Dummer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for dominating this conversation a little bit. Section 1 regarding the privacy of the settlor and the beneficiaries. And there's talk of, you know, generational wealth in this bill. I'm wondering if someone from the Department or the Division could speak to it's said here in the supporting documents that other states do this. Can we have some examples? How many other states do it this way and sort of which states?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I'm aware of Wyoming and South Dakota. There may be additional states as well.
Only Wyoming and South Dakota. Oh, I'm sorry, you said there are additional states, but would you say a majority of states do it, have these kind of provisions?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I'm not aware of a majority of states having these provisions. However, these provisions do make those states the most attractive states to file a trust because they allow for personal privacy of the trust.
And when you say personal privacy, what do you mean exactly? So in the initial creation, what exactly is normally public that is now made private?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I will defer to law to clean up this, but if that anything that's filed would be available in a court of law, so sealing these records make them unavailable for the public. And if Amy Robinson has additional comments, I defer to her as well.
if I could direct that to Amy, Ms. Robinson.
Yes.
Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Robinson, what are the kind of things that would be protected here? Are we talking about, for example, the dollar amount? Would that usually become public in a courtroom? How much money is going into this trust, and then now we are removing that from public view, or is it a different kind of fact or information that is being sealed here?
For the record, Amy Robinson, Drug Department of Law, through the chair to Senator Dunbar, the type of information that would be made confidential through this change relates a lot to Section 1336.035A, and this is the type of cause of action that can be brought under this section, and those are the types that we would be looking to have sealed through the new provisions. And to address your question about finances, yes, the settlor's finances and or the assets of the trust would be shielded if they are the subject of the court action. Similarly,
No one spoke, ma'am.
I'm sorry, I thought there might be another question.
Nope, you can continue.
Thank you, Chair Druckmann. To continue, the only other insight I might add is that the types of trusts that these would typically apply to are irrevocable trusts. So either the settlor is alive and they potentially have a significant amount of wealth, they may be famous families, and they would like to be able to settle disputes outside of the public eye.
May I ask a question?
Senator Dunbar.
I guess this isn't a question for today. This is more a comment, and then if the department wants to come back with thoughts at a later date. But I would argue, you know, we've seen an incredible concentration of wealth in this country, and I think there's a reason that only a very small number of states have taken this approach. I think there is a public interest in knowing when a huge amount of wealth changes hands or goes behind an irrevocable trust. And traditionally, some of those things have been through court records. You know, it's not splashed across newspaper headlines, although it might, you know, if you look at something like the Murdochs fighting over control of Fox News or something like that. But I do think that less and less information about wealth shifting within our society reduces the ability of people to understand what's actually going on. I would assume that it doesn't impact things like tax information. The government can still access it, but I would just put that out there, and I'd like to hear, not today, but at some point the department respond to that. Perhaps we could do something like put a money limit on here, and I'd like to hear at a later date if Department of Law thinks that is practical. So, you know, a normal family, not even a normal family, but a normal wealthy family might in their lifetimes accumulate $5 million of wealth or something like that. And we say, okay, that changing hands doesn't totally change our society. But maybe if we put a cap, so we say for amounts lower than $5 million, then this is fine, it's sealed. But more than $5 million or $10 million, then there is a societal benefit to knowing when these things happen and having it be established in the record. And again, doesn't have to be today, but I want people to think seriously about what happens when $200 million sort of changes hands or goes into a trust and there's no court record of it or how it happened that the public can consume. So again, doesn't need to be answered today, but I'd love to hear the department's thoughts on that before the next hearing.
Thank you. Senator Riant.
Thank you, through the chair. I just more a comment. It's not a question. I just wanted to put it out there that there are states, as mentioned before, that do a very good job of protecting everyone's privacy, and we just have a decision to make here if we want to stay open for business or not, because if we start to limit the amount of money that we'll allow before people could possibly have their information aired to the public, then people will probably just do business in those states. So
I have a question. why is it in the state's interest for people to file trusts here in our state?
Senator Bjorkman, Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent question. And it just increases Alaska as a place to invest. It aligns with our Alaska Business Initiative in attracting all sorts of economic activity in the state throughout all the sectors that we have. We want Alaska to also be at the forefront of the financial sector. It is not right now, but allowing for large amounts of wealth to come into the state will allow ancillary services as well, perhaps banks, attorneys, other high-paid professionals to come to the state to work in that industry. So it's very far-reaching, but it does promote economic development.
Thank you. Any further questions? Okay. Hearing and seeing
One last question. Sorry. Senator Dunbar. Just off of the chairman's question. These trusts that are set up in Alaska, are they restricted on spending the money as it comes out of the trust in Alaska?
No. Okay. Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I would defer to Department of Law on that question.
For the record, Amy Robinson for the Department of Law. Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, if I may ask you to please repeat your question.
So the assertion is that having more trusts set up in Alaska will spur economic development, make us open for business. Those trusts, when they're set up, are they restricted to spending the money that comes out of the trust in Alaska?
The chair, Senator Dunbar, no, I do not believe they are restricted to spending the funds in the state of Alaska. I am not prepared to answer the question entirely. However, I understand that there is a requirement that they deposit a certain amount of assets within the state. I don't know that that is a set amount, and I apologize. I'm not sure if that's in statute or if that's an industry standard.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anything further? I trust that we will have additional conversations about this item. At this time, we will set Senate Bill 225 aside and set up for our next bill. We'll take a brief at ease. Back on the record now, it's 2:28 p.m. here in Senate Labor and Commerce. Next up is Senate Bill 198. We first heard this item when we had a presentation last week on the bill. Today, it is my intention to hear a brief recap of the bill and bring a committee substitute before the committee for consideration. today to once again present their bill. We have the Honorable Senator James Kaufman and his staff, Emma Torkelson. Welcome back to Senate Labor and Commerce. We appreciate your patience, as we have had a very trusting committee meeting so far. Mm-hmm. Would you please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your brief recap of the bill?
Thank you. For the record, Senator James Kaufman, Anchorage Senate District F. And I trust the committee will find this bill to be a compelling piece of real estate on our legislative roadmap. So the purpose of this bill, and we're bringing it back today, is to align with the Armed Board recommendations, number one and two, which were the basic recommendations we were seeking to make. And we had some cleanup that we had to do in the version that we presented before, as we described. And so we're just coming back to make those corrections and then move with the will of the committee.
Most excellent. Are there any questions or comments from committee members about the underlying bill before we place the CS before the committee? Hearing and seeing none, may I have a motion, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 198, version 34-LS-0943/November as the working document.
I'll object for purposes of explanation. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman, and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, already done that. But the CS before you removes sections 2 and 5 from version A and renumbers the remaining sections. These sections originally made changes to the Medicare premium subsidies for retirees to align with the reduced years of service in this bill. As we discussed in our first hearing, after the bill was introduced, we learned that the Armed Board had intentionally not recommended changes to those subsidies, as they have now have an actuarial impact on the health of the fund that was not studied. So basically we didn't have the data for that. So version N before you puts SB 198 back in line with the recommendations of the Alaska Retirement Management Board, or ARM Board as we referred to it earlier. And I appreciate the committee working with us to make this change. I'm happy to take further questions. But we also have the ARM Board Chair, Bob Williams, here available for questions.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman. Are there any questions about the proposed CS? Hearing and seeing none, I'll remove my objection, and CS is adopted. Are there any questions for Mr. Williams? Not only is Mr. Bob Williams the chair of the Alaska Retirement Management Board, but he also is a retired award-winning math teacher. So thank you for joining us today, Mr. Williams. It's kind of a big deal. Okay. The CS is before the committee. Are there any final discussions, wrap-up from Senator Kaufman before we move to the will of the committee?
I'd just like to say thank you for all considering this on this Friday afternoon. I appreciate it greatly.
Very well. May I have a motion, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move to report committee substitute for Senate Bill 198, version 34-LS-0943/November from committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, committee substitute for Senate Bill 198, version 34-LS-0943/N, as in Nikolaevsk, is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Monday. We will take up one item for sure, and maybe others. However, one item for sure, and that will be Senate Bill 81, Public Employer Pension Contributions. The hearing for Senate Bill 121, Health Insurance Allowable Charges, has been canceled at the request of the bill sponsor. As there is no further business to come before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee today, we are adjourned at 2:33 p.m.